Imagine Monty Python with no pictures, the Goon Show set to music, or the wackier parts of the Beatles songbook, and you still won't have a handle on the Bonzo Dog Doo-Dah Band, a group that could only have been successful in the days of swing in London, but which has influenced plenty of performers in the years since they broke up. Rock historian Ed Ward has their story.
Hi there, nice to be with you. Happy you could stick around. Like to introduce Legs Larry Smith, drums. And Sam Spoon's rhythm pole. And Vern Dudley Bohay Noel, bass guitar. And Neil Innes, piano. Come in, Rodney Slater, alto saxophone. With Roger Ruskin Spear on tenor sax. Hi, Vivian Stanchel, trumpet.
If there ever was a band so British that it was fated to have members named Vernon Dudley Bohay Noel, Roger Ruskin Spear, and Vivian Stanchel, a man, as members, it was the one that evolved from a bunch of art school cut-ups in London, who first played together in 1962. Dressed as dandies out of a Woodhouse novel and playing Vodeo-Do music, and with a great affection for George Studdy's cartoon dog Bonzo, they originally called themselves the Bonzo Dog Dada Band, but somehow Dada got corrupted to Doodah. Singing turn-of-the-century novelty tunes, the weirder the better, they got to be pretty popular as mid-60s London got more colorful. The next thing they knew, they had a recording contract. Their first two singles were novelty songs from the past, My Brother Makes the Noises for the Talkies and the Hollywood Argyle's Alley-Oop, done in an oddly fey manner. But in 1967, their record company decided they'd do better with an album, and thus was born Gorilla.
There once was a very famous man. On his famous horse he'd ride through the land. The people used to see him everywhere. When he died, they put a statue in the square.
Hooray!
Here comes the equestrian statue, prancing up and down the square. Little old lady, stop and say, well, I declare. Once a month on a Friday.
Gorilla was a weird record, and not just because the Bonzo Dogs were a weird band. It caught them just as some of their earlier members were leaving to join trad jazz bands, and as Neil Innes, who played guitar and piano, was discovering he could write straight pop material like their third single, The Equestrian Statue. This tension between campiness and deranged pop would mark the band's entire career. Their stage act, too, became filled with odd props and pieces of art, and soon they were the in band to go see in swinging London. John Lennon came down one night and heard them, and the next thing they knew, they were performing one of their songs in the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour film.
Well, that night, cutie called a cab.
Baby, don't do it.
She left her east side room so drab.
Baby, don't do it.
She went out on the town. No, they will make her love a frown.
Death cab for cutie. Death cab for cutie.
Someone's gonna make you pay your fare.
Death Cab for Cutie was as typical of what they did as anything. They were all over the map. And it illustrated Viv Stanchel's knack for turning newspaper headlines into songs. Their next album, which came out a year later, in the fall of 1968, was even more ambitious. The Donut in Granny's Greenhouse asked if Blue Men Could Sing the Whites, or are they Hippocrites, had two mini-rock operas, Rockalizer Baby and Rhinocratic Oaths, and, in a rock and roll first, Roger Ruskin Spear playing a trouser press.
We'll do the trouser press, baby. One, two, three. You're so savage, Roger.
Oh, press those trousers.
Ecstasy, Bruce. Ecstasy.
John Lennon wasn't the only Beatle who liked the band, and apparently it didn't take much for Vivian Stanchel to convince Paul McCartney to come down to the studio to produce a song Neil Innes had written.
I'm the urban spaceman, baby, I've got speed. I've got everything I need. I'm the urban spaceman, baby, I can fly. I'm a supersonic guy. I don't need pleasure, I don't.
Urban Spaceman, produced according to the label by Apollo C. Vermouth, became a top 10 record in England. And although it hadn't charted in the U.S., the band's albums had been released here, so they began to consider touring here. They could have stayed home. They were getting work on television, and their shows were becoming legendary. But they went. The first tour was short, and there were problems. The second tour was much larger, but the problems were still there. The record company refused to promote them, and they'd arrive in city after city to find their albums unavailable. Unwilling to go further in debt, they cut the tour short, canceled TV appearances, and went back to England. Even though Tadpoles, the album with Urban Spaceman on it, had done well, the group was falling apart. Although there were six people on the album covers, the dominant figures were Neil Innes and Viv Stanchel, one inclining towards zany pop material, and the other a true British eccentric.
When Mr. Slater's parrot says, uh-oh, a geezer likes to get one on the go. We hope to hear him sweat. We love to hear him squeak. We like to see him pointing fingers in his horny beak. Sometimes he wants to whistle through his nose while picking up a peanut with his toes. If Johnny Morris had him on his show, you'd hear the purest favorite say,
hello!
Their next album, Canesim, was to be their last, although they didn't realize it at the time. You can always tell when a band's had it when they record a song about themselves, anyway.
We arrived at the gig looking rough, not happy we'd all had enough of 8 hours on the road.
Max Lowry said,
it's the booze of Amida, boy.
Yep, yep, yes, indeed.
And the hotel reception was empty and cold, with horrid red wallpaper 40 years old.
It sank like a rhino house.
Mr. Slater said,
oh, I can stop in the loo.
Oh, really?
No, sir, O'Reilly.
After this record, they took a break, never intending to make it permanent, but that's how it turned out. Neil Innes joined a succession of pop groups, and Stanchel had a short-lived band with Eric Clapton, followed quickly by a nervous breakdown. They still owed the record company one more album, and in 1972 they released Let's Make Up and Be Friendly, but except for a very long recitation by Viv Stanchel, Rawlinson's End, which later formed the basis for a film, it sounded like a lot of filler. Roger Ruskin Spear became an art lecturer, Legs Larry Smith is a designer, and Neil Innes has done everything from commercials for chocolate to children's television, although he's best known for his appearance as one of the Ruddles. Vivian Stanchel became increasingly odd, although he remained a beloved figure, and he burned to death in a still mysterious fire on his houseboat on the Thames in 1995.
Rock historian Ed Ward lives in Berlin. He wants to thank Sue Suttle Taggart for her help on this piece.